Part 4. Alexandria, 124 BC. Bartimaeus. It was a dangerous time in Egypt. Raiders from the south had crept up past the cataracts and put border towns to the sword. Bedouin tribes wreaked havoc on the merchant trains negotiating the desert bridges. At sea, Barbary pirates preyed on shipping. The king's advisers urged him to seek aid from abroad, but he was old, proud, and wary, and refused. In a belated effort to appease his enemies at court, Ptolemy put his talents at their service. This, as he was happy to admit, meant me. "You must forgive this indignity," he said, as we sat on the roof the night before I departed. "With due respect to Afer and Penrhenutit, you, my dear Reckitt, are the most vigorous of my servants. I feel sure you will carry out wonders on the nation's behalf. Follow the orders of the army captains and improvise where necessary. I apologize for any hardships you may undergo, but in the long run you shall benefit too. With luck, your efforts will get my cousin's agents off my back and allow me to finish my researches."
I was wearing the semblance of a noble desert lion, and my growl was suitably low and deep. "You know nothing of the baseness of men's hearts. Your cousin will not rest until you are dead. Spies watch our every movement. I caught two priests, imps, skulking in your bathhouse this morning. I had a word. In a manner of speaking, they now serve you." The boy gave a nod.
"That is gratifying to hear."
The lion gave a belch. "Yes, they kindly donated their essences to strengthen mine. Don't look so shocked. In our world we are all one anyway, as I have told you." As usual, the merest mention of the other place was enough. My master's eyes sparkled with a far-off light. His face became dreamy and reflective.
"Reckitt, my friend," he said, "you have told me much, but there is more that I wish to learn. I believe that a few more weeks' work will suffice. Afer has had some experience with the shamans of a distant land. He is advising me on their methods of departing their body. When you return, well, let us wait and see."
The lion's tail struck rhythmically upon the stones of the roof. "You should concentrate on the dangers of this world.
Your cousin, Penrhenutit, will protect me while you are gone. Have no fear. Now, see, they are lighting the watchfire on the tower. The fleet is massing below. You must depart."
There followed a spate of much activity for me, during which time I had no contact with my master. I sailed with the Egyptian fleet against the pirates, and fought in a pitched battle off the Barbary coast, during which we successfully destroyed the principal pirate fort and released 100 captives. The scrap was memorable mainly for me fighting single combat with a fiery Afrit above 2 sinking ships. We chased back and forth along the burning oars and fenced among the rigging using portions of the broken mast. In the end I brained him with a lucky blow and watched him sink, still smouldering, into the pea-green depths. Next I marched with troops to the Theban desert and ambushed the Bedouin, carrying off a number of hostages. During our return march we were set upon by a group of jackal-headed jinn, who were only narrowly defeated. A certain red-skinned individual was prominent among them. After causing general havoc, Jabor was finally put out of action when I lured him into a system of sandstone caves and caused the tunnel roof to collapse upon him. Without pause for rest, I headed south to join the main body of the king's army in search of vengeance against the hill peoples of the Lower Nile. The campaigns here lasted 2 months, ending with the infamous Battle of the Cataracts, during which I fought 20 foliots on a lip of stone high above the frothing waters. Losses were grave, but the day was won, and peace was restored to the region. An Egyptian peace, that is. Still plenty of rape, pillage, and murder, but now carried out by us rather than against us, so that's all right. I had been put through considerable trials, but my essence was strong, and I did not resent it. In truth, my master's researches, his desire to establish parity between jinni and human, had touched me, despite my scepticism. I dared to hope that something might come of it. Even so, I feared for him. He was altogether unworldly, insensible to perils all around. One night, during our occupation of the hill country, A bubble materialized inside my tent. Ptolemy's face showed in the glassy surface, faint and far away.
"Greetings, Wreckit. I hear congratulations are in order. Word of your successes has reached the city."
I bowed. "Is your cousin chuffed?" My master seemed to sigh.
"Unfortunately, the people proclaim this as my victory. Despite my protestations, they cheer my name to the rooftops. My cousin is not pleased."
"This is unsurprising. You must... What's that on your chin? Is that a scar?"
"It is nothing. An archer fired on me in the street. Penranutet flung me aside, and all is well."
"I'm coming back."
"Not yet. I need another week to complete the work. Return in 7 days. In the meantime, go where you wish."
I stared at the face.
"Really? You're always moaning about the limitations of free will. Now's your chance to experience it. I'm sure you can tolerate the pain of this earth for a little longer. Do what you want. See you in 7 days.
The bubble became a vapor and was gone. This invitation was so unexpected that for some minutes I could only wander aimlessly around the tent, rearranging the cushions and looking at my reflection in the polished brasses. Then the full import of his words struck me. I stepped outside, took a last look around the camp, and with a cry, launched myself into the air. 7 days passed. I returned to Alexandria. My master stood in his workroom, wearing a white tunic without sandals. His face was thinner than before, his eye sockets grey with tiredness. But he greeted me with his old enthusiasm.
"Right on time," he said. "How is the world?"
"It is broad and beautiful, though there is too much water in it. In the east, mountains rise to the stars. To the south, forests swallow the land. The architecture of the earth is infinitely varied. It has given me much to think about."
"Some day I shall see it too. And humans? What of them?"
"They erupt in isolated patches, like pimples on a bottom. Most do without magic, I believe." Ptolemy grinned.
"Your insights are profound. Now it is my turn."
He led me to a door and showed me into a quiet inner chamber. The floor was covered with a circle, larger than average, decorated with hieroglyphs and runes. Beside it, on the floor, were herbs, charms, piles of papyrus, and waxed tablets, all covered in my master's scrawl. He gave me a tired smile.
"What do you think?"
I was busy scanning the pentacle's barriers and word chains. "Nothing special here. Fairly standard issue."
"I know. I tried all kinds of complex reinforcements and hexes, Wreckit, but it just felt wrong. Then it occurred to me, all our normal safeguards are there to restrict movement. You know, keep the jinni out, keep us secure. I want the opposite effect. I want to be able to move freely. So if I do this..."
With a deliberate toe, he smudged the cochineal line that marked the perimeter of the circle.
"That should allow my spirit to depart. Through that little hole. My body shall remain here."
I frowned. "Why use the pentacle at all?"
"Aha. Good point. According to our friend Afa, the shamans of distant regions, who converse with jinn on the borders of our realms, speak certain words and leave their bodies at will. They do not use circles, but they are not trying to pass through the boundaries between our worlds, those elemental walls you have told me so much about. And I am. I think that just as the circle's power pulls you directly to me when I summon you, so the same circle can propel me in the opposite direction, through the walls, when the words are reversed. It is a focusing mechanism. You understand?"
I scratched my chin.
Sorry, what did Afa say again?"
My master raised his eyes to the heavens.
"It doesn't matter, but this bit does. I think I can reverse the normal summons easily enough, but if a gate does open up, I need something on the other side to guide me safely through. Something that provides a destination."
"That's a problem," I said. "There are no destinations in the other place. No mountains, no forests. I told you that countless times.
I know. That's where you come in.
The boy was crouching on the floor, rummaging through a pile of the usual magical paraphernalia that every Egyptian magician accumulated. Scarabs, mummified rodents, novelty pyramids, the lot. He held up a small ankh and thrust it in my direction. Ankh, a kind of amulet, T-shaped, with a loop at the top. Symbol of life. In pharaonic Egypt, when magic was commonplace, many ankhs contained trapped entities and were powerful protectors. By Ptolemy's time they were usually symbolic only. But iron, like silver, always repels the jinn.
Think this is iron?
A waft of essence-stinging cold. I leant back irritably.
Yep. Stop waving it about. Good. I'll keep this on my body for protection. Just in case any imps come calling while I'm gone. Now, back to you. Rickett, I thank you for all the services you have done me. I am in your debt. In a moment, I shall dismiss you. Your obligation to me, such as it is, will be at an end.
I bowed in the customary way. My thanks, master. He waved his hand.
Forget that master business now. When you are in the other place, listen out for your name, your true one, I mean.
Bartimaeus, this was. Thought you might have forgotten. Ptolemy never used it, for politeness' sake.
When I have finished my incantation, I shall call your name 3 times. If you wish, you may answer me. I believe that will be enough to provide the destination that I need. I shall pass through the gate to you.
I looked dubious, in that way I have. You reckon?
I do.
The boy smiled at me.
Rickett, if you are sick of the sight of me after all this time, the solution is simple. Do not respond to my call.
It's up to me?
Of course. The other place is your domain. If you do see fit to call me over, I shall be most honored.
His face was flushed with excitement, his pupils dilated like a cat's. In his mind he was already tasting the wonders of the other side. I watched his movements as he went over to a bowl beside the window. It contained water. He washed his face and neck. "Your theories are all very well," I ventured. "But have they told you what will happen to your body if you pass across? You are not a creature of essence." He dried himself on a cloth, looking out over the rooftops, where the commotion and bustle of midday hung like an invisible pall upon the city.
"Sometimes," he murmured, I feel I am not a creature of earth, either. All my life has been shut away in libraries, never experiencing the sensations of the world. When I come back, Rickett, I shall wander afar like you have done.
He turned and stretched his thin brown arms.
You are right, of course. I don't know what will happen. Perhaps I will suffer for it. But it is worth the risk, I think, to see what no other man has seen.
He stepped across and closed the shutters on the window, shrouding us both in dim, pale light. Next he locked the chamber door. "Perhaps," I said, "you will find yourself in my power when we meet again."
"Very likely."
"Yet you trust me?"
Ptolemy laughed. "What else have I been doing all this time? When did I last bind you within a pentacle? Look at you now, you're as free as I am. You could throttle me in a blink and be gone."
"Oh. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that." The boy clapped his hands.
"Well, the time has come. Penrhenutet and Afa are already dismissed. I have no obligations left. So, it is your turn. If you want to hop into the pentacle, I'll set you free."
"What of your own security?" I glanced around the darkened room. Slats of light from the shutters ran like claw marks across wall and floor. "With us departed, you're helpless if your enemies find you."
"Penrhenutet's last task was to take my guise and ride south along the old highway. He let himself be seen. The spies will be following his caravan. So you see, dear Rickett, I have thought of everything."
He motioned to me. I stepped into the circle. "You know, you don't need to risk yourself in this experiment," I said. I was looking at his narrow shoulders, his scrawny neck, the skinny legs sticking out beneath his tunic.
"It's not an experiment," he said. "It's a gesture. It's redress."
"For what?
3,000 years of slavery? Why take the burden of so many crimes? No other magicians have ever thought this way."
He smiled.
"That's just it. I'm the first. And if my venture goes well, and I return to record it, many others will follow after me. There will be a new era between djinn and men. I've made some of the notes already, Reckitt. My book will take pride of place in every library on the earth. I won't be there to see it, but who knows? Perhaps you will."
His passion won me over. I nodded. "Let's hope you're right." He didn't answer. Only snapped his fingers and spoke the dismissal. The last thing I saw as I departed was his face, gazing after me, confident, serene.